Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Dr. Tom Mahoney. Tom is an experienced educational leader, executive coach, and speaker with more than three decades of leadership experience. He is known for his leadership, creating a culture of continuous improvement, leadership development, collaboration, and measurable results. And he's been recognized nationally for his leadership. He has some great thoughts to share. One of his simple philosophies is be of service always in all ways. Looking forward to today's conversation with Tom. It's great to have Tom joining us for our conversation this week. Appreciate you taking time out of your week to chat.
Yeah, no worries. This is I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, great. Could you give us just a little overview of your career and kind of where you how you've gotten to where you are today?
Sure. So I was in public education for 33 years, which is a bit ironic because growing up, I was a bit of a ruffian growing up, and academically challenged would be a kind way to say my academic journey. And so I spent 33 years, I taught mathematics, and I coached football and wrestling, and then moved into building administration, then central office administration, and then ultimately served 14 years as the superintendent of the Oregon Community Unit School District in Illinois. And it was a great experience. I mean, what I found kind of in a transition period in college, the university asked me not to come back for a semester or so. And during that semester, often finding myself, I discovered that what drives me is helping other people and helping lift them up, helping make them better. And so I started as an accounting major and then transitioned into education because of that. And it was a rewarding career to just try to create better opportunities for kids and adults. It's really powerful when you see some of that work get done. And during that journey, I became an executive coach and been doing that for 15 years now. So toward the end of my last 10 years of my coach or last or 12 years of my superintendent career, and then I continue to do that now in retirement.
Great. So were there any particular times or transitions that significantly changed kind of the trajectory of your career? What were those points that?
Yeah, well, my sophomore year in college, I got kicked out of school. My grade point average that semester was 1.71. And they didn't just kick me out. They said, you need to leave and we'll take you back, but you have to do two things. You have to show that you can be a true college student. So you enroll in a community college and take at least two classes. And then they said you need to get anger management counseling. And so as a kid, I was just brought up that the way you dealt with frustration was through violence. So just how I was taught and became very natural for me. And as I got older, I realized society didn't necessarily deem that appropriate. But those two things, that opportunity, that counseling, and that having academic success, because my academic success was purely related to me just sitting and doing homework. It was, sure. You know, I just wouldn't go to class and I wouldn't read the material and I wouldn't do well on the test and I couldn't figure that quite out. And so two things happened during that time. Number one, I discovered my love of helping people. And the second thing was the lesson I learned that was probably the most transformative for my career was it was easier to do the work than it was to try to find ways to get around the work. And once I did that, after that period of time, there's been nothing in my career, anything hard in my career. I've just said, okay, just do the work and it'll all work out. And that has served me well throughout my career in education and in coaching and as a parent and as a husband.
So looking back, I love this question to ask most of our guests is if you're to talk to a 22-year-old Tom, what advice would you give him as he was entering his career?
I think one of the things would be patience. Even to this day, sometimes for some reason, I believe it should be easier to change other people than it is to change me. it took me a lot of years to get to where I'm at now, but I don't always want to give those people that time. Sure. But generally the three things that I would think about is just learn, listen, and build relationships. Because if I'm doing those things, right, learning, if I'm being curious, building relationships, connecting to others, lifting people up around me, being a plus person, you know, a person that it, when they're in the group, they're adding to it, right? They're not dragging it down. And then the last thing would be seek out uncomfortable concepts or ideas. I think one of the things that's really helped me over time as I've gotten older is when I hear something contrary to something I believe, I don't confront it. I dig into it. Explain more. What does this mean? What do you mean by that? And those things have really helped me long term in my career and certainly helped me today.
So what is one leadership lesson that you learned the hard way? What did anything stand out as you look back?
Sure. I would. there are many of them. There are many of those lessons that I've learned the hard way. I think the most important one is when people put their trust in you and you violate that trust, even if it's unknowingly, but you violate that trust because you weren't clear about what you were going to do with that information. That impact with adults is everlasting. So the opposite of that is when you deal with kids, I could coach a kid and I could get on that kid. I could chastise that kid. And then I could put my arm around that kid a minute later and say, you've got this. You can do this. I believe in you. And that kid would jump right back. They were pliable. They snap right back. You violate the trust of an adult, and there is almost no chance you're going to build that relationship back. So being true to your word, going slow, being very clear about what you need to do with this information has been so beneficial post that experience, that relationship that I still don't have back, even though I've apologized for the misstep. So it's been very helpful to do that.
What do you think separates a good leader from a great leader?
Well, I think it's a couple things. Number one is outcomes. I think there's a lot of good leaders, a lot of very good leaders who do a lot of very good work, who people feel good to be around, who are lifted up, who improve their skills, but the outcomes aren't there. Ultimately, even in education, we're in an outcome-based business. And so you have to create those outcomes. Now, that said, the counter to that is the idea that I have to create outcomes while lifting people up. So if I can do those two things, but you're helping people grow, you're advancing them in their career while you're advancing whatever the primary mission of your organization is, you're a great leader. Because right. Now you've developed both people and things.
So is there a piece of feedback that you received and it changed how you operate as an individual?
Well, I it wasn't much feedback as it was a revelation when I was in my 40s taking a coaching a certification class. One of the leaders of that class said to me that curiosity was a choice. Mm-hmm. And it's a little embarrassing to say this at 40, but I thought mm-hmm. curiosity was innate. I thought it was something that mm-hmm. if somebody said something and I got this feeling, oh, I'm curious. I didn't know I could make the choice to be curious. And that changed, that altered who I was. It altered every relationship I had. It improved every relationship I had that I could choose to be curious in any situation. And then there's other emotions you can choose. I can be angry. I can be vengeful. I can be sad. But if I choose to be curious, generally those things ended up being better. And that really changed everything in my entire life. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our listeners are new leaders, maybe in their first leadership role or their new CEO. What would you say as far as if they're looking for somebody to come alongside them as a mentor or a coach? What would you look for?
So I think when you're... Well, I think they say, but can they help you produce outcomes and can they lift you up? Mm. If you're a new leader and you're in that role, that's the first time you're very isolated in that role and people talk about it. So I had talked to other people who had done the work and then getting in an experience is entirely different. Feeling that aloneness is entirely different than just talking about it. So finding somebody that's going to be both help you drive toward your outcomes and you're lifting you up. And the second part is so important because that's a personality fit. When I coach, I'm very direct. With the permission of my clients, I'm very direct. When they say something, I hold them accountable for what they say. When they pivot, I dig into what's causing the pivot. And so those types of things for some people are so uncomfortable, it's just not going to work for them. That's just not their fit. So, but for me, the fit is the most important part if they can do those first two things.
What do you think leaders overcomplicate?
Themselves. Many leaders I deal with suffer from, the imposter syndrome. And I've heard it said that 95% of all leaders suffer from imposter syndrome and the other 5% are liars. And they overemphasize their importance. And it's not that that role isn't important, but there's a whole organization. If that leader went missing for a week, the organization would not shut down. It would continue either good or bad. If the systems aren't in place, aren't good, then they're not going to be good. So that would be the first thing. And the second thing is, no one's stronger than the system. So there's a book by Heifert and Lenski called Adaptive Leadership, and it says this quote, "There is no such thing as a dysfunctional system. Every system is exactly aligned with the outcomes it's getting." So if your outcomes aren't right, it's because your system is bad. And you just trying to come in and use words or use motivation, that's not going to change the system. You have to change the system from the inside out to get those different outcomes. So just remembering that it's not about personality. It's about creating the system that will allow the outcomes you want.
That's good. So as you think about somebody coming into a new role, that transition piece, what do you think they need to be aware of most? And that everybody talks about that first 90 days. What do you think would be helpful if you were to coach somebody coming into a new leadership
role? Well, again, my experience has been, the most productive, leaders that I've worked with have spent that first 90 days working with their people, that is listening to them. And it's not only their communities, any of their stakeholders that are directly related to the organization. So digging in and building relationships as well as gathering information during that first 90 days is crucial to whatever your plan is going to be. I'm assuming after 90 days, most people put out their strategic plan. So it's crucial to making that strategic plan as accurate as possible. And the second part is reminding them that people lie or they withhold. And so just because you've met with them and they've told you this doesn't mean that's everything that's going on. So you've got to make sure you're asking it's the questions you ask and the follow-ups you have with those answers that the people give you that allow you to dig deeper into those areas that people just don't want to talk about. And you better find those out as soon as possible, because if not, they will come back and haunt you.
So somebody coming into a new role, a lot of times they don't have the big picture of actually where the team is at. Yep. It might be completely different than what they anticipated. So somebody coming into a new role and they find out this is broken. I need to help in the process of fixing it. What are some things that are critical? You mentioned as far as meeting with the team, getting to kind of the core. Are they telling the truth? Are things going well? They might say they're going well and they're not.
Right.
What are some things that you would encourage a leader to do?
Well, first, I want to go back to your comment about when you come into a job, you don't really know what you're walking into. And I think hiring is the oddest possible thing we do, because in some ways, what happens is the candidate lies to the employer and inflates as best they can their best characteristics so they become more attractive to the employer. And the employer who wants the candidate will inflate their best things that are going on in the organization, right? So we're both kind of lying to each other. Then we get together and we're like, hey, this isn't what it was. And then the board says, hey, you're not who I thought you were, right? It's an odd thing we do when we do this work. In terms of really knowing and trying to figure that out. So the first thing I always tried to do is when I discovered there was a dissonance in what I was seeing and hearing, I had to have the whatever evidence I could collect to see what the outcomes of currently were, where they were at. So using the evidence backwards to create the system. Okay, here's where we're at. What happened before this? What happened before this? So it's a reverse mapping of where we're at now. And in that process, often as you go backwards, you start to see where there's handoffs in departments, where there's just misaligned goals. You start to see the breakdowns in the system. So first I have to identify what's the current system in place, and then where is the breakdowns in those systems.
You mentioned a quote earlier. Any other quotes that you refer to repeat to people that you're coaching?
Yeah, I've got a couple that I would pull out quite frequently. One would be, let me be clear. I am a strong advocate of clear communication. But when I say clear, I mean crystal clear. I mean no room for interpretation. And so my team knew when I had to go with a let me be clear that there was no wiggle room in this, and it had to be done in this manner. And that just is a leader that helped me with them. And then I had some other ones that would just remind me. This was for me. My head football coach in college would say all the time, it's the little damn details. And he was right. Generally, when things didn't go well, it's because I lost track of the minutia. Now, I don't want to be mired in the minutia, but I can't lose track of it either, because it can become very important. And then the other one was being born average isn't a choice, but living a common life is. And so the idea that we don't get to pick our intellectual, our athletic, our my hair choice, I don't get to pick that, right? But what I do with that is up to me. And you always have the choice on how you're going to make that day be.
So books that you have had an impact on you that you would recommend to others as far as his leader?
Well, I mentioned one. It's The Practice of Adaptive Leadership by Heifetz and Linsky. There are a couple of Harvard professors. It changed how I led, because I started to understand diagnosing the system will lead me to where the problems are and then what needs to be changed. On a personal level, the book that changed my life was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Mm-hmm. And I've read that book probably 10 times over 30 years. But every 2 or 3 years, I like to pull it out and reread it, because it means something different to me each time I've read it. I've changed in my life, and also the things that are important to me have changed in my life. I have a deeper understanding of those things now. And the last one that I would recommend is called The Coaching Habit. And it's a great reminder to leaders that you don't always have to provide the answers. Sometimes the value is in the right question. The idea that the power isn't the solution. The power is helping the person grow to develop the solution.
So as you think about our current time, you know, all that's going on in technology improvements with AI and some of the other things, how are you coaching leaders during a time of rapid change? How do they stay on top of that? And what advice would you give to a new leader?
So it depends on where my leader's at in terms of where they're at in their own maturity and their role. But generally what I do with leaders is, who's the expert in your team in that area? And again, expert's a relative term, right? So the expert in the room may just have just a little bit more knowledge than everybody else, right? And so then the question is this something that you're going to develop expertise in, or is this something that you're going to develop in somebody else's and help them to become the expert? And so we invest heavy in the people that we want to be the expert in terms of how they're going to grow their knowledge and understand things. But I would say, just to, you know, got some years, the idea that the personal computer was the same thing as AI. When it first came out, if you remember, I think Popular Mechanics said in 1979 that the work week will be 30 hours because the computer will free us up with all this time, right? Then the internet, right? How that changed everything. Then AI. The front end is always very unassuring, and the people who are able to and willing to see what and predict what it could look like in the future can take advantage of the front end when there's so many opportunities here with what this can mean for business.
Yeah, I heard someone say, you have to look at it as, do you want it to be a tailwind or a headwind, and how do you view it? And
there's a book about early adopters too. Like the whole idea, there's a group of people who are always going to adopt early. Mm-hmm. Most of it's the bell curve. Most of us are in the middle. And then there's the late people who literally, my dad still has a flip phone. So until that thing dies, he is not going to have another kind of phone. That just, he's not going to change. So, I don't necessarily think you have to be in the very front end, because it takes a lot of risk there too, but certainly toward the front of that second normal part of the curve. Mm-hmm.
So who is the best leader that you've ever worked for that made an impact on you and how you lead?
It's interesting you asked that question, and I don't think I have a one best leader because I've taken what I consider the best traits of all the leaders I've had. My dad was a tremendous leader in our house in terms of what work ethic meant, of what our responsibilities as men meant, what it was to be a husband. And so that's an invaluable lesson. But then I worked for a gentleman named Doug Creason, who was a financial genius in terms of public funding for schools, and learned so much about how to work the system, both the politics of the system, not internally, only internally, but going down to Springfield and working in Springfield with the legislators to get things done. I've just been fortunate to work for so many good leaders, some of my football coaches, and how they could hold you accountable in a very uncomfortable way, but still you felt loved. And so those skills I've tried to adapt to the roles that I was in an appropriate fashion for the people I was working with.
So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
So I've got two daughters. One got married in March of this year. The others get married in September, and they're both very excited to start their families. So we travel to go see them. They're out of state. We hike. My wife and I hike at least once a week together. I am an avid fitness enthusiast, so I am doing some type of resistance training or cardio training every day. And then lastly, I got my personal training certification recently as kind of an avenue that would also allow me to help people grow in an area. We see a lot of senior citizens that need help, and it just gives me an opportunity to provide them service that way.
Great. So if you were to give our listeners one piece of advice, kind of parting advice about leadership or growth or life, what would it be?
For me, the thing that's changed my life is this idea that it's never been wrong to be of service. There's never a bad time to be of service. No situation was ever made worse by somebody being of service. So when in doubt, be of service. And when you're serving your community, when you're serving your employer, when you're serving your colleagues, when you're serving your spouse, your kids, your parents, it inevitably, number one, fills my bucket up, but it makes their day better. And if you do that enough, you string enough of those together, really good things happen.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.